Hello everyone, this is Professor Reena Pujara, having an industry experience of 6 years and 6 years of teaching. The Industrial Employment Standing Orders Act 1946. So here we are talking about that era wherein no such act was passed, wherein some compulsions were made on the employers for providing some certain benefits, certain sets of benefits regarding their health, safety, welfare, etc. So here the act, the main objective of the act is to bring under purview all those establishments. Earlier it was a minimum number of workers who are being employed in an establishment. If they exceed 100, then this act was applicable. So under this standing orders, or we can to understand it simply, we replace this word for our understanding, that is terms of employment. So when we talk about standing orders, they are stipulated terms of employment under which a employer will hire a employee, and it will conclude with all those terms and conditions aligning with the acts which are being passed for certain areas. Now say for example Minimum Wage Act. So if a Minimum Wage Act is passed, so all the terms and conditions, or Payment of Wages Act, so all the terms and conditions regarding the payment of wages, amount of wages, the registers to be maintained, and what all will be the process that will be carried out by an employer in his establishment has to be submitted via standing orders, and that needs to be certified. The Industrial Employment Standing Orders Act 1946 came into force on April 23, 1946. The act applies to whole of India. It applies to whole of India. The establishment all over India are covered under this act. It was initially made applicable to only those industrial units, undertakings or establishments wherein 100 or more workers were employed on any day of the preceding 12 months. So earlier when the act was passed, it was applicable to a limited number of establishments and industries, because the norm of this act wherein it will be applicable was a minimum employment of 100 or more workers. So any establishment unit or undertaking wherein there are more than 100 number of workers employed will be covered under this act. Subsequently, the act was amended in 1961, 63 and 82. So there were several alterations and amendments made in this act with respect to the current situations and with respect to some other acts which were passed during this period. So say after 1947, the major act which covered all the establishments called Factory, that was Factories Act 1948. So there were some provisions made in that act, so which were not required now to be added in the Standing Orders Act. So there were several alterations and amendments made in this act with respect to the other acts which were passed in this period, and with respect to the growing needs of the industries. The act empowers the appropriate government to extend the provision of this act to establishment employing less than 100 workers after giving not less than 2 months notice. So as we have understood that earlier when this act was enacted and when this act came into force, it was applicable only to those units who hired 100 or more number of employees. But then central government has that power to apply or implement this act under those industries which are employing less than 100 workers at the given point of time. But then by giving prior notice to such an establishment that you also have to bind by the Standing Orders Act, by giving a prior notice minimum of 2 months of its intention to do so in the official gazette. The Act applies to all the industrial establishments as defined in Clause 2 of Section 2 of the Payment of Wages Act 1936. So, when we talk about Payment of Wages Act 1936, which talks about the process, the method, the period of payment of wages, and the rules and regulations regarding payment of wages. So, under that Act, Section 2 Clause 3 talks about all those employment, which are being covered under this clause, are also covered under the Standing Orders Act, the Employment Act. Factories as defined in Clause 2 of Section 2 of the Factories Act 1948. So, another way here is, earlier we have dealt with the scheduled employment, which was being maintained in Payment of Wages Act 1936. Similarly, which all establishments will be called as factories is defined in Factories Act 1948. So, according to the definition of factories, we understand here that this particular act will be applicable to all those scheduled employment mentioned in Payment of Wages Act. At the same time, all those units which will be called as factories will also be included under this act. Additionally, the railways as defined in the Indian Railways Act 1890. So, even railways will be covered under this act. Establishments of a contractor who employs workmen for the purpose of fulfilling the contract with the owner of any industrial establishment. So, here we are also covering those contractors who acts as an agent or who acts as a middleman between the primary employer, that is the establishment or the factory, and between the workers. So, several times the need has been felt to hire contract labors. That means a particular factory or establishment additionally would hire contract labors who will be renewed over a period of time. So, certain privileges are being offered to this contract labors also according to the acts, Contract Labor Act. And here all those contractors who act as an agent are also covered under this act. What are the main objectives of the act? Maintaining harmonious relationship between the employers and the employee. So, ultimately when we talk about all those aspects which are covered in industrial relations and labor laws are intending towards creation of harmonious relationship, smooth relationship, peaceful relationship between employees and employers. But then, the way the methods that are being used differentiate from each other. So, when we talk about Industrial Disputes Act, it is trying to do similar kind of thing through a resolvement of disputes and grievances internally and providing a machinery, method and process through which these grievances can be resolved. When talking about this act is trying to do so by compilation or say a mutual agreement or consultation on what all rules and regulation, what all processes, what all methods should be the part of terms of employment. Whenever we talk about terms of employment, that are those sets of rules and regulations which needs to be abided by all employees, workers working in an establishment or unit. But at the same time, it also talks about the obligations that needs to be fulfilled by the employer towards the workplace, the workplace culture, the working conditions and benefits of employees. So, all these are being somewhere extracted, combined and put forward in such a way that it is acceptable by both the parties. And this in turn will reduce the frictions, the conflicts, the opinions of ideas, because somewhere it is being done mutually or there is a voluntary agreement on it. Maintaining harmonious relationship between employers and employee are to regulate the conditions of recruitment. Now, what is recruitment? Recruitment is all those possible efforts which are being made to attract a candidate, or I would say best candidate, to come and apply for the job. But here we understand recruitment a bit other way. Now, say for example, in some kind of units, the recruitment pattern is statutory in nature. That means certain set of tests or exams will be taken, then some interviews will be taken, and finally the employee will be selected. So in that case, that all rules and regulations for the selection or recruitment of employee will be in the standing order of that particular establishment. Whereas there are some factories or some establishment which may hire employee on contract basis. So that becomes a terms of recruitment, that they hire employees on contract basis. Then some sets of skills are required by a kind of a worker to fulfill such a place or such position in the workplace. So what will be the recruitment process in that case? Somewhere this is also going to help, the Equal Remuneration Act, wherein the women's and men's both are considered as at par, and for equal type of work, equal remuneration is being paid, which will not allow the employer to do any biasness while recruiting any female. That means if a female applicant is competent enough to occupy that particular seat or position, and not offering the position or seat to that particular female and offering the same to men. So these type of biasness may happen. So to avoid all this, recruitment is considered as an important component of such standing orders. Then comes discharge. Discharge of duties may be in several cases. It may be in the case of retirement or superannuation, when a particular person reaches at an age wherein the services are automatically discharged, or it may be in the case where the employee himself or the worker himself leaves the organization, then there are discharge of duties. But otherwise there are several other cases wherein the discharge through dismissal of the employee, or maybe through retrenchment, through layoffs is being done. So all those rules and regulations which needs to be abided in case of dismissal by the employee, worker or employer, both are being mentioned over here. Disciplinary action. Now, disciplinary action is being taken only when there are some offenses committed when it comes to terms of employment. Now, I take an example to explain this. Say for example, in a factory or in an establishment, you are supposed to reach your workplace by 9 o'clock, and there are some registers maintained to make entries of your ingoing records and outgoing records, and you are supposed to reach there by 9 o'clock. Every day it is being observed that you reach late to your workplace. So certain warnings will be given to you that you need to come on time, that is 9 or before 9, but you won't be allowed to come late henceforth. After several warnings also, the employee or the worker continues that casual behavior of coming late to work. Then in that particular case, what will be the disciplinary action? What punishment or penalty? When we talk about penalty, definitely we cannot expect a worker to pay penalty. So in this case, what type of punishment will be given? Say we take an example that whether some amount of wages will be deducted from his or her salary or wages, or there would be some other punishment given. So here all these disciplinary action, for which type of offense, what type of disciplinary action will be taken, all these have to be consolidated and presented in standing orders. talking about leaves. What all leaves will be provided to an worker working in the establishment? What kind of paid leaves? What kind of, you know, maternity leaves? And then what kind of leaves when a person is sick? How many leaves? What will be the procedure to avail such kind of leaves? Then what will be the process one has to go for to avail such kind of leaves will be mentioned in this leaves. Holidays. Talking about holidays, holidays are apart from the leaves. Now when we talk about holiday, the list may come out state wise. There are some national holidays which are being given every establishment nationwide. Now say for example 15th August. So 15th August is considered to be a national holiday, and that will definitely be in the list of holidays, whether irrespective of any state. But there may be some variations depending upon the state and the region the establishment falls in. So now say for example in Maharashtra we have declared holidays for Ganesh Utsav. So maybe somewhere in the region of south region may have some different list of holidays. So this list of holidays should also be well defined in advance, and it forms a part of standing order of the workers employed in industrial establishment. The Act amended in 1982 also provides for payment of subsistence allowance. Now when this act, I have already told you about, there were several alterations and amendments made in this act. So one of the amendment which was made in 1982 talks about subsistence allowance. Now what is this subsistence allowance? Now we take an example to understand it better. Now for example, there is an establishment wherein an employee or a worker was charged of doing theft, or it is being said that certain employee A was found doing theft, and so that particular person is suspended. After a few days, it was realized that it was not employee A who has committed this particular crime or theft. It was employee B who has done this. So we here call that employee A back to work. We ask him to join back. But then what in that case, the number of days he has lost for his employment when he was suspended from the employment for the investigation purpose. So now what in that case, whether the employer will be liable to pay the wages or some compensation or not? So this amendment which was made in 1982 talks about allowance to be paid to such workmen who is kept pending during its suspension for the inquiry purpose. So what type of allowance, how much has to be paid? The rules regarding payment of subsistence allowance to the suspended workmen were further amended by a notification in 1984. So certain rules and regulations, or you can say provisions, were made regarding the subsistence allowances which are being paid to the suspended employee during the course of inquiry. So here there were some alterations made again in 1984. The subsistence allowance at the rate of 50% of the wages which he was entitled to immediately preceding the date of suspension. So here the calculation for the subsistence allowance would be, you need to give him or her, the employee who is suspended, 50% of the wages. 50% of the wages, which wages? Which he is or he was drawing at the time of or at the date of suspension. So at the date of suspension, say for example employee A was drawing 500 per day. So 50% in that case would be 250 per day till the time the inquiry is over or for the first 90 days or for the first 90 days of the inquiry. And in case the inquiry goes further, then 75% of such wages for the remaining period of suspension. If the delay in completion of the disciplinary proceedings is not directly attributable to his conduct, that means the employer will be paying 75% of such wages when the inquiry is extended. But in the other rule, it says that the extension of such inquiry should not be directly attributable to his conduct. The employer shall normally complete the inquiry within 10 days. So, the normal stipulated time for the completion of inquiry is 10 days. But then in certain cases, it may go long. Section 3 of this Act talks about submission of draft standing orders. That means whenever we implement, any final rules and regulation, we first try to prepare a draft. So, similarly here also before such standing orders which are binded, initially a draft has to be prepared, a rough draft has to be prepared. Within 6 months from the date on which this act became applicable to an industrial establishment, the employer shall submit to the certifying officer. Now, who is the certifying officer is not being defined yet. 5 copies of the draft standing orders proposed by him for adoption in his industrial establishment. So here now employer makes an effort to draw a draft or you can say a sets or a list of rules and regulations, processes, methods and materials. That means register, records, whatever he is going to maintain in his establishment. What will be the terms of employment? What will be the processes for recruitment, etc.? So here this draft is being prepared and in 5 copies it is being given to the certifying officer. The certifying officer is an authority or is a person who will review this draft and will be in a position to convert this draft into the final binding standing order.